Welcome to episode 35.
Very special number for me.
Of Around the Outside and IndyCar Podcast. Yes. It is your football number.
It is my number.
Very, very nice. I just now realized that.
It needs to be retired from B. Mooresville High School.
There you go. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? That'd be nice. So, anyways, on this episode, we are going to start the episode off, and we're going to talk about Bobby Unser. We lost a legend.
The great Uncle Bobby.
And Bobby Unser. We kind of do something different. We don't go through a whole bunch of stats because we both have a personal aspect to our relationship in dealing with, as in your case, and how he really shaped my life in my case. So a couple pretty interesting stories.
Yeah, for sure.
About Bobby Unser. So that's the first segment. And then obviously we move into Texas, all things Texas. We cover both races.
Obviously.
Go through everything that happened over the weekend. And then in the third and final segment, we run through some news.
Yeah, nice and quick episode for you.
News of the day. So.
Gotta love news of the day.
It is race month in Indiana.
Back home again.
And we can't wait.
Cannot wait.
Enjoy this episode.
It's a good one.
Here you go. All right, here we go. Episode 35 of Around the Outside, an IndyCar podcast.
Yes.
With your hosts, as usual.
Chris and Ryan.
Chris and Ryan.
As always.
Going to start this episode out talking about Bobby Unser.
Uncle Bobby.
Obviously, as if you're listening to this podcast, then you're a race fan, and you've heard that we lost Bobby Unser this week.
Yes.
And I've read a lot of stuff about Bobby Unser. I've, you know, read Robin had a couple things out, I think, mm-hmm. Robin Miller, about Bobby. They had a really tight relationship, and you know, I've seen a lot of things on Twitter, and so people can read all about those stories, and mm-hmm. We could go through his stats, and we could do, you know, I mean, we all know he's a 3-time 500 winner and umpteen time Pikes Peak Hill Climb champion.
For sure.
But I thought what I would do, because I've got a personal connection with Bobby Unser, because he really kind of shaped my life, per se. I can remember when I was maybe 3 years old going to the track, and my grandma would always bake a pan of brownies.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom and grandma would take me to the back gate, which, if you're looking at the garages nowadays, it would be the southeast entrance to the garages, that gate right there. So now, this is back in the day. This is like 1974, 1973, something like that.
Right.
So it was the old garages. So my grandma would always bake a pan of brownies, and then would take me to the track, and then we would walk up to that gate,
mm-hmm.
and we would tell one of the yellow shirts that my grandma, who was pretty persuasive, right. Would tell them that we needed to talk to Bobby Unser.
Right.
And so, and I've actually got a picture somewhere of me giving Bobby Unser this pan of brownies when I'm like 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember years ago, Jack Arute had a blog that he had started, and I wrote this thing, kind of a story. Basically, it was this story, but I wrote this story and sent it in with that picture to Jack Arute, and he ran it on his blog. Man, this, you, I don't even know if you were
born yet.
You may have been one or two or three or something like that. But so I did this every year because Bobby Unser, when I was that age, was my favorite race car driver.
Uh-huh.
I remember when the museum was outside of Turn 1.
Right.
Vaguely. I mean, because I was really young when it was there. But I remember climbing underneath the ropes because they had his 68 winning car, which we saw at the museum not too long ago. But I remember climbing underneath the ropes and climbing into that car and sitting in that car.
Right.
And, you know, and I got ushered out. You know, the people came and said, hey, you can't be doing that. But I was like three at the time. So every year I would go back to the garages and my grandma would bake a pan of brownies. And we would meet Bobby Unser and talk to Bobby Unser. Well, one year, both my parents were there. And I was about four, I think. Four, maybe turning five because my birthday's in May.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby Unser suggested to my parents that they put me in a quarter midget.
Right.
So it was Bobby Unser that really got me started in quarter midgets.
Mm-hmm.
And I started racing quarter midgets when I was five, ran them until I was, I don't know, 13, 14, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That really shaped my life because that just ingrained racing into my blood.
Right.
So, that's how Bobby Unser really set my life on a path to what it was to when it comes to not only the Indianapolis 500 and my love for the Indianapolis 500, but my love for IndyCar racing specifically, but all of racing as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when it's cool as a dad, when you get to pass that on to your kid in this situation, me to you, and then you catch the bug and buy in and end up falling in love with that place at 16th and Georgetown.
Right.
Just as much as I love it.
And it all came full circle with Bobby Unser my first year in the garages.
It all came full circle. So why don't you tell that story?
So first year in the garages, it was the first year they announced the junior badge, because for the longest time it was just the bronze badge and silver badge where you got in. You had to be 18 years or older. So I think I was 11. Pretty sure it was 2011. So you always had a tradition of getting that year's hat for the 500 and going around and getting autographs on it. So
I've got a lot of hats.
Well, it's a lot easier for an 11-year-old to get an autograph than it is for a full-grown adult.
A 35-year-old, yes.
So passed down on to me.
Yeah.
And so this, I'd never gotten an autograph before this, right? So Bobby Unger's out, and I actually want to say he was at that last row by the gas station in the garage area, if you know where I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Walk up to him.
Back here where, like, Andretti's,
the backside of Andretti. Yeah. Couldn't remember who was there. So I hand him the Sharpie. But when you hand the drivers or whoever the Sharpie, you're supposed to get, like, you take the cap off and put the cap on the back of the Sharpie, and you hand them the back of the Sharpie.
Right.
Well, 11-year-old Ryan didn't realize that, and I gave him
the tip
of the Sharpie. And I marked all the way down, like, his entire hand.
I know.
And
he went to grab that Sharpie, and you jacked his hand off. And the look.
Yeah, I don't think he was too happy.
The look that he gave you was one of just death. Like if he could have like just reached out and started beating you, I think he would have.
Yeah.
He was not a happy camper.
He held it inside though when he gave me the autograph.
He did do that.
We went about our day.
So that's too. It's funny how you look back and you think about how that place affects your life.
Mm-hmm.
And how many memories you make there. And I mean, we could sit here for days and talk about just the stuff that we've seen in the garages.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that we've met. And
we've done one.
It's amazing. But so that those are our Bobby Unser stories. And it's kind of a little different from the norm of just coming on here and saying, well, Bobby Unser won in, you know, the 68 race and blah, 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 you know.
Right.
And anybody can get on there. There's plenty of stories out there.
One of the funniest you can go listen to is the Dinner with Racers podcast.
Right.
That is one of the best podcasts I have ever listened to in my life.
Yeah.
With Bobby Unser.
If you have not had a chance, but in our opinion, Dinner with Racers is by far the best racing podcast that there is.
I would agree.
And their conversations, and I mean, and they've had them with everybody.
Yep.
Mario and you know, I mean, just I don't think they've done one with AJ yet, but
not yet.
But the one with Bobby Unser is absolutely incredible.
It's awesome.
The stories that they tell, or the stories that he tells on there.
It's pretty good.
I mean, I think it's a two-parter.
Yeah, it's really long.
Because they talk to him for... I mean, it is incredible. So do yourselves a favor and go listen to, if you haven't, Dinner with Racers.
Bobby Unser.
With Bobby Unser.
It's pretty good.
Because it is...
It's really good.
Incredible. So, rest in peace, Bobby.
Yes.
I'm sure the track...
They'll do something.
Is going to do something
on race day.
On race day, you know, to honor him.
Yep.
I did hear an interesting fact. This is the one stat that I'll throw out there that I heard on another, and I heard it on Nathan Brown's podcast with Jack Harvey. They were right. Talking about it, and so this is where I get the stat from. So hopefully it's correct. I know the latter half is correct. Bobby Unser finished last in his very first Indianapolis 500 in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
He finished first in his last Indianapolis 500 in 1981. So
it's quite the improvement.
He went from last in his first and first in his last. I thought that was kind of an interesting stat. So, but that's our tribute to Bobby Unser. Great guy.
Yeah. Love Uncle Bobby.
Changed my life 100%. And I was 5 years old at the time.
And he helped me learn how to give autographs.
And that he did.
Ask for autographs, I should say.
We'll take our first break, and we'll come back, and we'll start breaking down these Texas races.
Yep.
Stay with us.
And here we go as we recap the past weekend at Texas Motor Speedway, the doubleheader they had there. And well, I think we'll start it off with race one.
Let's start off before that.
That actually true, because there was no qualifying.
There was no qualifying, which, okay, I get it, the first race.
Right.
They had a bunch of rain down there, and it took them a long time to dry the track, and then practice was delayed. And they would only have like an hour and a half or something in between practice and quals or something like that. So they canceled qualifications, set the first race by
points,
owner's points.
Yep.
By, you know, car points, basically. Which is okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
But they did the same thing for race number two.
Which was not a good decision.
Which was garbage.
Yeah.
Because they had all day, and they did nothing.
Yeah, they just sat.
And they could have qualified.
They could have.
And if they qualified, then some of these guys that were involved in that opening lap wreck wouldn't have been back there.
Right.
More than likely. So, I think that was a mistake.
I agree.
On IndyCar's part. They should have qualified the second day. But they didn't, and it is what it is. So, first race, Throw the green flag. Pelot's on the pole.
Leads six laps. And then
Scotty D starts second or third?
Started third. And then I just looked at it, and he led 212 laps, I believe.
Yeah.
Or actually, I think 206, because it was a 212 lap race, and Pelot led six.
Right. He checked out.
Yeah, dominated.
Gone. And
no one came even close.
Just like we figured. Couldn't pass.
Yeah, race one was definitely a lot worse than race two when it came to that.
Couldn't pass, and
no side-by-side action, nothing like that.
I think Graham now, and I heard some people talking about, I was listening to Kevin and Kevin in their track side, and somebody called in or texted in and said there were 278 passes, you know, in race one, and 200, you know, and I'm like, okay, there may have been, but if there were 278 passes mm-hmm. in race one, my guess is 260 of them were when people were pitting.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you just couldn't, you just can't do anything on that track.
Not right now.
You know, and
know, when they reconfigured it and changed the banking and surface, and then they add the PJ1 or whatever it's called for NASCAR, which actually Texas has come out and said that as much as it sucks for IndyCar, they're going to continue laying down PJ1 for NASCAR.
Right, because that's their cash cow.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why Eddie Goss has came out, because, I mean, there were a lot of people vocal.
Yeah, a lot of people complain about
including
it.
Including us, yeah. Or, you know, me, because I'm usually the one that posts on our Twitter stuff. Yeah. But, you know, it was a garbage race. I don't care what anybody says. That's my opinion. It was a garbage race. I'm not even saying that you got to go back to the 2 and 3 wide. You know,
you don't need the
10 rows deep.
You don't need the constant pack racing.
You know, I'm not saying that that's exciting. Very exciting, but geez, oh Pete, man.
We're just asking for to be able, because if you're at an oval, right, you should be able to make a move, no pun intended here, around the outside.
Around the outside. I mean,
on an oval, it has to be able to happen.
I like a
high-banked oval like that.
I like Will Power's suggestion. You know, I listened to an interview with him, and he said that IndyCar should just mandate, like, the last 15 minutes of a practice, you have to run that second groove. He was like, 15 minutes, make us run the second groove, rubber it in. He goes, and then the race will be so much better.
That's a good idea.
But they don't do that, and it's, you know, it's a snooze fest. I mean, it wasn't, I mean, it just, the
sadly,
race was not good. It just wasn't. It was good for some people, right? It was good for Scott Dixon because he won the race. It was extremely good for Scott McLaughlin.
Yes.
First oval race in an Indy car, and he brings it home second.
Yeah, awesome result for him. I was really happy to see him end up there. He started to challenge Dixon there towards the end. I think he closed the gap a little bit. I think he got within 0.3.
Yeah.
He was closing in little by little. I think if another 10 laps go by, traffic may play a factor with Dixon.
Yeah.
But that just wasn't the case, and Dixon ran away with it.
I just get so tired of listening to, gotta save fuel. I get so tired of listening to that. There's got to be a way where, and there is a way where they can figure out an exact lap count that takes that away and either forces it into a 3-stop race
mm-hmm.
or puts it right on the edge of being, it's probably a 3-stop race, but it may be a 2-stopper if you save some fuel and you catch some, whatever, you know, because then is where the strategy comes in and the field may get jumbled up or whatever the case may be. You know, this guy's going to make it on two stopper as you know, whatever. But I don't know, man. They got to do. If you want my honest, I love Texas Motor Speedway. I've been to Texas Motor Speedway. I've watched a race at Texas Motor Speedway. The night race back in the day. Awesome facility. It's an awesome track to watch a race at. It's intense.
Yep.
But I think it needs to come off the schedule. And I, you know, replace it with a number of tracks, ovals.
Yeah.
You know, Kentucky. I would love to go back to Kentucky. Homestead. We've been hearing that because there was a thing out, an article that said IndyCar's, you know, Roger's looking, wanting to get more ovals.
Yep. As soon as next year.
And I know everybody says, oh, you know, here comes the, you know, here comes all the IndyCar fans. Go to Michigan and go to, yeah, I mean, that would be, if, have you ever been to a race in Michigan? But that's an awesome racetrack. A
Michigan race would be great. Right
to
now.
Have an IndyCar race. Yeah. Is it going to happen? No, because we're at Detroit and, you know, and that's sad. But, you know, I mean, I'm not sold on Richmond. You know, I don't know if we, you know, if we were supposed to go to the Richmond race, by the way, but
didn't even get the chance to see it.
Right. The last few years that that they were there, the first time became like a parade.
Yeah.
You know what? It wasn't a great race. So I don't know. I think Homestead is probably your best bet.
I think Homestead will end up on the schedule next year.
I think that's your best bet, but. You know, I don't know, man. Either that or, because, I mean, Eddie George said, you know, it is what it is. We need to find something that can, a compound or a chemical that can pull up that PJ1.
Eddie Gossett, you mean?
Yeah, Eddie. What did I say? Eddie George. Damn, he's a running back. to pull up that PJ1 for the Indy cars and then put it back down for the, I don't know. It just, something. I don't know, so. But back to race one, we got off on a tangent there. But,
right.
So Pato O'Ward was third, Palou was fourth. Grammy Rahal
fifth
comes home fifth,
and he started in the back.
He was the one that I think I tweeted out at one point in time during the race. I said, "At Graham Rahal ain't scared," because
he was making moves.
He was the guy making some moves.
Around the outside, but it was tough to make it because you had to fit your car in between the bottom car and the PJ1. Right.
I mean, so props to him, man. Props to him. Jay New was sixth. Harvey was seventh. Good race for Harvey.
Yep.
Alexander Rossi, eighth. Taku, ninth. And Pagano was tenth. Our boy, Connor Daly.
Not a good day.
He's kind of like the official driver of Around the Outside.
At this point, he
without
is.
Him giving us permission to say that, because we've never talked to him.
We don't have any money to offer you for sponsorship. But I think we can give you a couple bucks, but that's about it, brother.
But he came home 21st, a lap down. Again, difficult situation because of the way the qualifications went, and there were none.
He started.
I think he said P last.
Yeah, and that wasn't at fault of his own, because if he was in his 20 car, he would have been a little bit up the grid in the 17th, I believe.
So,
but because Max Chilton drives on the road courses, he ended up P last, as he says.
So, Scott Dixon brings it home, wins the race, and you're sitting there thinking to yourself,
"Here we go again."
Here we go, because now all of a sudden Scott Dixon.
Is on pole.
Is in the points lead.
Yeah, he's on pole.
Right? He's in the points lead. So, for Saturday's race, he's starting on the pole.
Yeah. Sunday's race.
Yes, for Sunday's race, he's starting on the pole. So, everybody's thinking, race is over.
Scott Dixon.
Race is over already. So.
Well, that wasn't the case.
We get to race two. Start the race. And we don't even get everybody across the start line, and Pietro Fittipaldi.
Leader stacked everybody up.
Gunsmoke's, who's he hit?
For the second day in a row, Sebastian Bourdais gets hit in the back.
Sebastian Bourdais, he had a bad weekend, man. That's an expensive weekend for Ford. Yeah. But causes a big melee, and Rossi's involved, and our boy actually takes the green flag
on the roof
on the roof car. Upside down.
I think that might be the first time in IndyCar history.
Man. Slides down the track, digs into the mud there, yeah. and flips him back over.
So right very side thankful up. For the aero screen right there in that situation. Woo.
Yeah, I mean, and it took him a while. He was, I don't know if he was just like had the wind knocked out of him, but he was slow moving when he got out of that car. So
I'm sure he had the wind knocked out of him.
But it was good to see him get out. It was good to see him with the interview after the fact and moving on with the race. So. Lo and behold, there's a little bit more passing in this race.
There is. There was a decent amount more passing.
Probably because now you've got a lane and a half of rubber.
Yep.
So there was a little bit more passing. It was a better race.
I would agree.
I will give it that.
It was a lot better race.
And who wins it?
For the first time in his career. And a little fun fact, the first non-Penske Chevy to win a race since 2016... at Watkins Glen, can you guess who the driver and team was?
Non-Penske Chevy.
Non-Penske Chevy.
2016. I'm going to say it was a Ganassi car.
It was a Ganassi car.
Because he was probably running a Chevy.
At the time, they were Chevy still.
Yeah, Scott Dixon.
It was Scott Dixon was the last Chevy driver that wasn't a Penske to win.
He was pretty good at Watkins Glen, if I remember.
Yes, he was. But Pato O'Ward with Arrow McLaren SP takes home his first IndyCar victory. Yep. Very well deserved.
Yeah, and for worked a while there, it looked like Jay New was gonna run away with this thing.
Oh,
and
another Pato, Tim Cindric's strategy.
Man. So Jay New finishes second, coming home third. It's our one. We got 1A and 1B for our official drivers of Around the Outside,
yep.
which is Connor Daly and Graham Rahal.
Yes.
They are right there on the same level.
And Graham actually led a few laps.
In this race. Graham looked good.
Well, because it was a really weird middle stint because, again, we go back to saving fuel. Everyone was backed like way off pace. To where it bunched the whole field up. So no one wanted to lead, and it was just a really weird middle stint.
Graham got out there and led.
He did.
For a while, and then he backed her down. And
Dixon got by him.
Right. But Graham finishes third, Dixon fourth. Colton Herta comes in finishing fifth, has a good race. Pagenaud sixth, Pillow seventh. Scott McLaughlin finishes eighth. Solid weekend.
Really good weekend for him.
Solid weekend for him. For the rookie, Rinus VK sneaks in there into P9 and
Rinus.
Top 10. First time I can remember talking about this guy in a very long time is Ryan Hunter-Reay.
Yeah,
brings it home 10th.
Good for RHR.
And I've got written down coming home in 24th is our boy Connor Daly, and I wrote upside down.
And then another point to touch on: this was Tony Kanaan's first race of the year.
Yeah.
Who actually led the first practice. Fastest car. And guess what? Gets rained out.
Right.
Starts in the back.
Because he's driving Jimmy's car.
Yes. Starts in the back for race two and is slightly involved in the first lap crash. Has to come in. Ends up going a lap down early.
Yep.
Never got the chance to show what that car could do out front.
And he had a rough weekend. First race, they had it geared wrong. You could hear it. You could see it on his in car where he would hit the rev limiter.
Yep.
You know, halfway down the straight.
And then at one point he couldn't use sixth gear.
Yeah,
he had to keep it in fifth, he was hitting the rev limiter
turn. Yeah, he had a long weekend.
But I think with him leading practice, I think that's a good sign for him at Indy this year.
So coming out of that race. Your point standings, and it's already doomsday for the rest of the field because Scott Dixon is in the points lead with 153 points, and his nearest competitor is Pato O'Ward at 131, so he's 22 points back.
Yeah.
Now, Indy can change a lot
of
stuff.
That is a game changer.
Because it's a double points race, just like basically this Texas week was a double points race.
Yeah.
So, Pato O'Ward is second. Pelot falls to third, 127. He's 26 points back.
Yep.
Jay New bounces back up to fourth. He finished, I think, last in the first race because of that wreck. He's got 116 points, 37 back. And then comes our guy. Solid weekend, moves up into points quite a bit. Graham Rahal's in fifth with 107 points.
He's doing what he needs to do.
46 back. Then Pagenaud, Herta, McLaughlin, Power, and Harvey. Harvey's in 10th, and he is 63 points back. So,
good for Jack Harvey.
A lot of races left. A lot of points to be had. Scott Dixon could, you know, I don't know. The cartoon anvil could shift to his car.
You never know.
I highly doubt it, but that could happen.
And now we turn to, besides the Grand Prix, not worrying about points for a little bit.
Yep.
And we turn to the Indianapolis 500.
The month of May is upon us.
Yes, it is.
And we will preview the Grand Prix next week.
Yep.
On next week's episode, and then we'll wait to kind of get into things, you know, all things May. I think what we'll do is we will, like we did last year, we'll do it again this year. We'll predict
the Fast Nine, or did we do the starting grid?
We predicted the starting grid.
We're gonna have to do it again.
Yeah, so we'll predict the starting grid. Each of us will do it on our own.
And everyone out there try to do it, because let me tell you, it is a lot harder than it sounds.
It's a lot harder than it sounds. It's a lot of fun, too.
It's a blast.
It's a lot of fun to do it, but it is hard, especially when you got bumping.
Yeah, this year's going to be tough.
So we got to figure out. So we'll wait until before quals to release that. We got to figure out who, because you don't know if Cody Ware is running yet or you know, whatever.
Yeah, been official.
But then, so we'll do a complete 11 rows of three prediction.
Yep.
And then before the race, we'll do a complete 1 through 33 finishing position.
We did do that last year,
right? And then we'll see where we fall. I think we got last year. I think we both hit like maybe five. Out of the 33.
Yeah. I had the race. I had Elio winning from about 20 something.
Right.
That didn't work out for me.
But we'll take our last break here real quick, and then we're gonna come back with some news of the week.
Yep.
And then that'll be wrapping up this episode. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
And here we go with the last segment of this episode, wrapping it up with some IndyCar news that's been coming out the past week.
Yep.
Starting it off, we got the sixth Andretti Indy 500 entry finally announced with who the driver is. And it will, in fact, be making his third Indy 500 start, Stephen Wilson, brother of Justin Wilson.
Stephen Wilson. Yes. He's been gone since what?
2018
was the last time
he
raced. So,
and actually, the last time he raced, it was with Andretti, and he actually found himself in the lead with under 10 laps to go, I believe.
Yeah, but then he had to pit.
Yes.
That was Will's win, wasn't it?
That was Will's win.
Yeah. Wasn't it him and Harvey?
It was.
Who were the two cars?
It was three, because it was Servia, Harvey, and Stefan that were in front of Will.
But he passed Servia.
He passed Servia, and then Harvey. So I think Stefan started like third or second and made it three wide into one and took the lead.
Yeah.
But those two ended up pitting, and Will got by Servia before that. So, obviously, and Will deserved to win that race.
He did. He was the best car. So, congratulations, Stephen Wilson, on getting the Andretti ride.
Glad to see him back.
Huge news.
Awesome news.
Robert Wickens got back in a car for the first time since his wreck.
Yeah.
An official race car at Mid-Ohio. And that was pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was with Brian Herta Autosport over one of his sports cars. you know, they posted videos of him, you know, in the car, and he had a helmet cam, and it showed the throttle on the wheel and the brake.
Right.
But it was just really cool to see him back in the car for the first time since, again, 2018.
Yeah, because he's kind of went...
he's kind of gone under the radar for the past
while. Kind of went silent for a while. Yeah, he was posting a lot of videos of his recovery.
And then he got quiet.
So...
And then it came out... not like a couple weeks ago, someone said something that Wickens has something coming up. So I figured something like this was coming.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to see him back behind a wheel. And hopefully, I mean, that's him making, you know, in the article, one of the articles that talked about him wanting to make a return to full-time action.
Right.
To car. So hopefully that means IndyCar.
That'll be awesome.
And hopefully he can rehab his legs back to enough to where he can run an IndyCar again.
That would be great. That would be great. Moving on to the old Simon Pagenaud.
Our favorite driver around here.
Not really, but I mean, you know, it's nothing personal.
It's just strictly business.
Strictly business. 8 to 4, as a buddy of mine used to say. But him and his wife had their first child.
Yes.
Marley, a little boy.
Good for them. Happy.
Born in May. Greatest month of the year. Yes, so it's a good birthday. So congratulations to... Paz and his wife.
Yeah, for sure.
On having their kid.
For sure.
Interesting news I just saw right before we started doing this was that Hilary Swank has been cast in a feature film where she is going to play Janet Guthrie.
That's really cool news.
Yeah, so I didn't read the article, so I don't really know too much about it. I just saw it real quick as I was thumbing through Twitter. But that is... that's pretty cool. Hilary Swank, I mean, that's not like some B, you know, B or C lister, you know. So
pretty popular celebrity.
Yeah. So having a feature film made about Janet Guthrie is going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's awesome.
And probably the most important news of the day, because he is my all-time favorite race car driver ever.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, the best to ever do it at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Rick Mears now has his own exhibit.
Yes.
At the museum.
And it is open.
And it is open. And we will be going to it.
That's so cool.
So, we were just at the track.
Probably a month ago.
A month ago.
Is when we went into the museum, I would think.
And they had Mario's exhibit going on, didn't they? Because all his stuff was in the back.
Was it STP?
What was it?
What's his name?
Andy Granatelli. Yes. Andy Granatelli. Had Andy Granatelli stuff going on. So, but now...
it is Rick Mears.
They have a Rick Mears exhibit.
Which is really cool.
And I cannot wait.
Probably see some really cool old 500, at least four 500 winning cars.
Winning cars, yes.
Very excited to see those back out.
79, 84, 88, 91. And speaking of 91... I got a shirt in the mail the other day from the shop.
Can't beat them.
We are a... I wish they had a loyalty customer program or something because frequent flyer miles, like we'd get a shit.
Hey, we're always open for sponsorship. You
because,
know what I'm saying?
Man, we do a lot of shopping at the shop.
We do.
But they have awesome stuff. And they have... right, they've got some vintage, old school 500 shirts, like with their logos. And one of them that they have is the logo from the 75th edition of the Indianapolis 500.
1991.
From 1991. And I bought that shirt.
Cool shirt. I saw it.
Yeah. So if you haven't been to the shop, it's theshop.com. Ed Carpenter Racing.
All his merchandise is theirs. They do all of ECR's merch.
So Connor's stuff is there.
A lot of old school Indianapolis stuff. You know, like shirts that say, always call it Deer Creek.
It's cool, man. You know, they got a store in Broad Ripple. They got a store in Carmel.
Yeah.
At Clay Terrace. But you can get their stuff online. And then I saw, and I almost bought it. And I actually had it in the cart. getting ready to pay for it. But Doug Bowles tweeted out a picture of a shirt that they had at IMS.
This is a great shirt.
With the urinals.
It's awesome. The troughs.
Yeah, but when I put it in the cart.
Yeah.
And went to pay, it was $44 with shipping. And I was like, I'm not paying $44.
Hey, but it is a cool shirt.
If they still got some at the track.
We might get one.
When we're there here in a week or so, then I may buy it. Yeah. But it is, if you know, you know.
The old troughs.
About the troughs.
Motor Speedway.
At the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So, having said all of that,
the most convenient way to pee.
It is the most convenient way to pee. So it's pretty, it's like a tradition at the track. So
that's funny.
But that's going to wrap things up for episode 35.
For sure.
You got our Texas recap. We got no preview, so we've got no predictions, no betting odds right now. But we will come back next week.
Yep.
And we will be previewing the
GMR Grand Prix.
Grand Prix.
And who knows, maybe at some point we will be live on video at the track on Friday.
We will be live at some point on Friday.
I'll be there. I don't work Friday. I might have to start a little live stream.
Ooh. Yeah, that's nice. When's the race? On Saturday?
Saturday.
Because that's my birthday.
It is.
Yeah, the big 5-0. Unbelievable.
A lot of years.
Not too excited. Not too excited about it. I'm not real excited about it. I can't lie. But
it's okay.
So this is a great month. Birthday month, race month.
Yep.
Can't wait. Can't wait. This is the best time of the year.
It is for sure.
For us. So everybody, thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you.
We'll see you next week on Around the Outside. Tell your friends about us. Get us some more listens.
Yes.
We appreciate all you guys listening and spreading the word. See you next week.
Deuces.